Well, speaking of reaching out, I know people in the audience here have questions of their own. So if you want to hand some up, I'll be happy to read them. What are your favorite movies, and how did they affect how you wrote Beautiful Ruins?
Oh, favorite movies. When I started working on this, I became a little bit of an Italian film buff. Not as much. So I watched Fellini and love his work. There's a movie called Mafioso from 1963 that is so funny, and it's about an American who returns to Sicily and gets in trouble with the local mafia don. And I loved that film. I just thought it was such a remarkable movie. I love Being There. But with Peter Sellers, one of my favorite movies of all time. I grew up next to a drive-in movie theater. We lived in a house right next to the drive-in movie theater, and we built a tree fort. So I saw a whole lot of great 70s movies without sound. But one time we decided we needed to hear the movies, so we snuck into the theater, the neighbor and I, during the day, and we cut a speaker and we wired it, and he unspooled the wire and I covered the wire with dirt all the way back up to our tree fort. And then we went, made popcorn, and we went out to watch the movie that was playing, Midnight Express, which is perfectly okay for a 12-year-old to watch. So we sat there with our bowl of popcorn getting ready to watch Midnight Express got up in the tree fort as the theater manager was pulling up our wire and staring straight at our tree fort. And so the sheriff's deputies visited the next day. So to this day, Midnight Express remains one of my favorite movies. I almost went to a Turkish prison over it.
Each of your novels is different from the last. Is there an underlying theme or a motivation common to all of them, though? And this is something you say you take perverse pride in, is that each book is so different.
Yeah. I think the thing underlying all of them is the intersection of humor with something else. I tend to write about characters who are a little baffled by the world around them. But I wouldn't ever want to read the same book twice. When I finish, I know a lot of readers just want to keep reading the same author, and I was never that way. When I finished, a Russian novel, then I wanted to read, something else, something contemporary and American, something British and comic, something suspenseful. And so I like to read all over the board, and then the writing turns out to be that way. It sounds sort of coy, but I really am just writing the next book I want to read.
Can you tell us a little bit about this carriage house where you do most of your writing? It's behind your
house.
Yeah,
one of the great things about Spokane is for a while the housing market was a little stunted. And so I used to love to invite my friends from Seattle over and show them my six-bedroom house with an elevator and a carriage house that I got for the price of like a one-bedroom apartment in Seattle or New York. We live in an old 1905 house on 5 city lots overlooking the Spokane River. It's a beautiful spot. I can hop on my bike and ride a trail along the river to downtown and be there in 5 minutes, or I can ride the other way and be out in a state park. It's a beautiful spot. And the carriage house is now the garage, but it was originally where they would put the carriage, before they had cars. And there's a little apartment above there. And my wife has been there in the 13 years we've lived in that house, I'll bet she's been up there 3 times, and only to like grab plates and tell me that I shouldn't leave sandwich crusts lying around. It's fetid, as she said one time.
But we should mention that Anne is an editor.
Yeah.
You said earlier that your good friend, who's also a writer, is the person who told you that that Beautiful Ruins wasn't quite finished. What role does your wife play in this? Does she ever read?
Anne's a great reader, and I used to give her my books first, and then I gave her, I think it was The Zero, it might have been Financial Lives. I gave her one of my novels and I said, I'm done, I want you to read this. And I went downstairs and got a cup of coffee, and when I came upstairs, she was reading Bel Canto. And so now she doesn't get to see the books at all. So, no, she does. But I told her I'd rather find her in bed with another man than another book, because I find that to be a much deeper betrayal. So. But she's a terrific reader. But as my spouse, she Is sort of legally obliged to tell me it's good, even if it's not. Whereas my friend Dan really isn't. You know, if Anne had been as harsh about Beautiful Ruins as if Anne had as Dan was, it would have.
You'd still be on the carriage house.
Yeah, it would crush. It would have crushed me. You know, I thought you loved me. So, if you have to live, and I think more so, if you have to live with the writer's personality, you know that it's better to just, you know. But once, she just gave me this amazing edit on this short story that I had. And I read the story in Seattle, and there was this huge laugh on her line. So afterward, I called her. I said, you're right. That line was much funnier the way you wrote it. So, and she was not the least bit surprised to hear she was right.
So. When Pasquale first sees Dee, he falls in love with both her and the moment. Have you experienced similar moments that had a lasting influence on your life?
Yeah, I just told one, Kurt Vonnegut, you know, that moment with my literary hero. It was sort of the question that I was posing with myself at the beginning of the novel. What if we don't fall in love with people? What if we fall in love with moments? And what if these moments could have such sheer power? When I started the novel, I thought, oh, what would it be? What kind of moment would it take for a man and a woman to meet, and then for 30 years later for him to go find her? And then it took me so long to write the novel, for 40 years later for him to go find her, for 50 years later for him to go find her. Thank God I finished it.
He almost didn't live, right?
I know, exactly. But that was originally the idea. Could there be a moment so powerful between two people that even though their love is unrequited, they remember each other in some way? They're at some crossroads of their lives. And when you start posing a question as a novelist, the entire novel is trying to find, not necessarily the answer, but to mull that question. And that was the question that I was posing throughout the novel, until the final chapter, which after having read Milan Kundera and this great quote about the present moment being impossible to capture and all the sadness of life lying in that fact, I decided to drop in on all the characters in the novel, kind of recreate the whole thing in this one fast-moving section in which it ends with, you know, the two of them finally coming back together.
Again, in the afterword, you marvel at all that happened in a single sentence in 100 Years of Solitude,
yes,
by Gabriel,
yeah,
Garcia Marquez.
Yeah.
And there are so many stunning sentences in Beautiful Ruins.
Thank you.
One that I particularly liked, and the one about the moment is one that's up there. But one that I particularly like, it was a description of Claire, and you described her as her curly red hair splayed out on the pillow like a suicide.
Yeah.
And then another, and this one was uttered by Pasquale's mother, what kind of wife would I be if I left your father simply because he was dead?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Do you have a favorite sentence in Beautiful Ruins?
Yeah, you know, there are a couple that as I was writing them, they felt like signposts for me. Like, this is sort of what the novel's about. There's and they sort of frame the story for me. The first one is, life, he thought, is a blatant act of imagination, which was a great exhortation, reminder to myself as I was writing this novel that I should be blatant, I should be imaginative, I should let the story go wherever I wanted it to. But also, it's about, you know, this book itself is a story about stories. The stories themselves triple and lay across one another, and just the idea that you know, that story is how we live our lives. And that's what moments are. They are stories that we create in our memories, and we give them meaning, and we create more than is there because we turn them into those kinds of stories. So that connection between memory and story. And then when Pasquale's mother tells him that, you know, that the closer your the less distance there is between what you want and
right,
what is
that's
right.
That's another great line.
The happier you'll be. And when I got to that point, I didn't know before that what Pasquale would do. And then I knew exactly what he had to do.
He had to go to Florence.
Yeah, yeah. And and not just had to, but that...
he wanted to.
Yeah, that he had he understood that doing right, you know, if there are two things you want and one of them is right, there's no choice.
Well, speaking of right, someone asked me this earlier. They wanted to know, you know, would Pat Bender's life had been different if he had known that his father was Richard Burton? And you struggled sometimes leaving your characters hanging, didn't you?
Yeah. You know, Pat was an interesting character because he is, you know, he has all those appetites of his father. He has this a similar sort of charisma.
Likes to drink.
I mean, I have to say, looking at the children of celebrities, they all turn out so well that, yeah, he would have been really well-adjusted, a guy with that appetite, with those appetites. No, I mean, of course, his life probably would have been different. It's sometimes people will pose questions to me like
As if they're real.
And I'll say, you know, I made all this up, right? you know, as if they know, well, what happens after? And I say, after what, you know? I took my fingers off the home keys and I went in and ate dinner. So, but I love that. I'm the same way. I mean, characters, and even these characters, you know, Pasquale and Dee became real enough to me that there. I swear there was a moment when I was writing when I got sort of a chill when I realized I was almost done with them after 15 years, and I felt like I was losing friends, you know, that I didn't get to sit and imagine what would happen to them anymore. You know, I spent a lot of years just thinking, what job would Dee have? Why would she change her name? That's so interesting. And who would she go out with? And what did her hair look like? It looked like Farrah's hair. That's hot, you know? You get to know these people in a way that is is a little psychotic in some ways. So.
Well, speaking of stories, this person wants to know, where did your interest in the Donner Party come from? Did you ever consider having Shane Wheeler write another type of screenplay?
So there was a draft early on where the screenwriter who comes into the story trying to sell a book is me. I come into my own novel, a la Kurt Vonnegut or a lot of other metafictional and postmodernist writers, and I come into this Hollywood meeting, and I've been in several Hollywood pitch meetings, and I try to pitch my novel to zero as a film. And it might be the worst chapter of fiction I've ever written, and I might be the least believable character anyone has ever written. It was awful, and I thought, but I loved the idea of someone coming in pitching something unmakeable. And I loved the challenge of having this ridiculous idea turn into something kind of interesting and poignant. And one of my favorite things that happened after the novel was published is a literary journal asked if they could publish the Donner chapter. And I said, as long as you include the exclamation point, you may. So as I was thinking of all these different forms, this was a form I'd never seen represented, a movie pitch. And the funny thing is, I've worked with Hollywood producers, and I got a call from a producer not long after the book was done, and he just said, oh my gosh, the book's great, I loved it. I love that Donner pitch. And I said, really? And he said, oh yeah, you could never make that movie. What an incredible pitch. And then he said, and I have to ask you, some of those reality TV ideas, can I have those? And I said, they're all yours. Yeah, yeah.
Anorexic?
Right,
or,
yeah, he wanted hookbooky. And he said, do you want any part of him? I said, oh my gosh, I would burst into flame if I worked on any of those. They're all yours. But I've yet to see any of them on television.
As I was reading the Donner story, I was sort of thinking of the producers and Hitler in Springtime.
Yes, right, yeah, a similar kind of thing.
You know, it could happen.
Right.
Beautiful Ruins can be considered a Hollywood novel. Are there other Hollywood novels you especially admire? And what would someone like F. Scott Fitzgerald say about the book?
I think F. Scott Fitzgerald would like it. I really do. And I think we'd be buddies. And we might go for a cocktail after this. So I love Nathaniel West's work. I think Day of the Locust is just a terrific dark novel, so good. I love Get Shorty. I think Get Shorty is a great Hollywood novel. Those two are probably my favorite. I love the work of Joan Didion. I love her nonfiction and fiction, the way she captures Southern California. So I would also say her work. I don't read a ton of Hollywood novels because the things that interested me in this novel aren't often my interest, you know. But those are probably some of my favorites. But I love the idea of hanging out with F. Scott Fitzgerald. I really do think we'd be buddies.
Can someone give me an idea of where we are on time? I don't want to keep people longer than 5 minutes. Okay. I'll ask a couple more questions that we have here. You said that writing is a religion. In Beautiful Ruins, Shane says movies are our religion.
That's right.
Are they both our religions, and do they serve different purposes? Good question.
Wow, that's a great question. That's like a grad student question. When I talk about seeing writing as a religion, I'm not talking about explaining the world or the afterlife or anything like that. I mean it that I describe myself as a writer the way someone says I'm a Catholic or I'm a Buddhist or I'm an optimist. It seems so tied into my character. As far as a belief pattern that explains the world, if writing were a religion, it would be a religion of depression. it would be a tough one. As far as film, the riff in the book, I believe, which is because we lost a lot of central things holding Americans together, media and film and television were the thing we had in common. Someone in Seattle and someone in Birmingham, Alabama, would be very different. But they would have connection if you told them, what movie did you stand in line for in the summer of 1977? And they would both say Star Wars. Everybody sees that movie. I do think the movie house became our church in some way. And I think it's both, as we become secularized as a country, finding those things that replace our common experience, you could do better than movies probably.
I have a stack of good questions, but time to
ask
them all. But
I'll give forward
ask
answers.
Two final ones.
False.
What satirists inspire you, and how did they affect the writing of Beautiful Ruins?
I love satire as a genre. I love Heller, Catch 22. I think of
Colbert
Don,
or Jon Stewart.
Oh yeah.
Any of those
guys? We live in such a richly satirical. Your average Buick ad is more satirical than anything when we were kids. The level of satire is so high that I can't even tell when my kids are being ironic. Have you done your homework? Yeah. You have? Yes. Are you being real with me? I don't know. Am I? I don't know. So, irony and satire are languages we all speak so freely that, the whole culture has kind of gone that way. I like dark satire as well, like being there, Jerzy Kaczynski. Yes, Coen Brothers. the films of the Coen Brothers I love. They're almost a genre unto themselves, though.
I think a lot of people here will want some advice from someone in your shoes. And besides read, what advice would you give to would-be authors?
Wow. Because I used to ask Kurt Vonnegut that, people sometimes ask me, and I sometimes have my prepared answer, which I'll have to recite from memory here. Basically, to read everything you can, to work as hard as you can with fidelity toward the craft itself, and to try to recreate the effects of the writers that inspired you, that you love, but to get out of your head too. It's so easy to get inside your own head as a writer. So I always encourage writers to work with children, to volunteer, to do anything they can to avoid authorial narcissism, which can just be deadly among authors, to not give in to commerce or to the surface banality and speed of the culture, and finally to never ever take advice from writers.
And on that note, I think there are lots of people here who would like you to sign
a
book.
I can do that. Thank you. Thanks so much, Penny.